This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Veterans Day edition featuring three different vets from three different states, three different branches of service, but a common commitment to the ideals of America. Julesburg is a small town in the northeastern corner of Colorado. About 1,300 people live there, but a lot of people come through there. And earlier this year, when a blizzard whited out western Nebraska and northeast Colorado, quite a few travelers found themselves stranded in Sedgwick County because Interstate 80 and all the roads in and out were closed. In Lee Kaiser's old Ford garage and museum in Julesburg, they found not only physical warmth, but plenty of emotional warmth and a whole lot of history. Lee was Julesburg's barber for nearly 70 years. He's also been the mayor. His old Ford garage and museum preserve not only classic cars, but local history and military history as well. Check out the videos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for a taste of that. And listen as Lee shares what he remembers of that small town of Julesburg on December 7th, 1941.
We had a little ball game going on in the vacant lot right west of where our house was. All of a sudden, somebody come running out and says, "We've been bombed, we've been bombed." And somebody said, "Well, where?" And they said, "Well, Pearl Harbor." And of course they said, "Well, where in the world is Pearl Harbor?"
And I guess you probably found out pretty quickly. And did you see things changing right after that?
Immediately. The lady next door to us had a boy in the Navy. He graduated out of high school in 36 up here. Nothing to do during the Depression, so he joined the Navy. A month before Pearl Harbor, he was on the USS Arizona. A month before Pearl Harbor, he was transferred to the cruiser USS Houston. Well, we know what happened to the Arizona. He missed that. He went down in the South China Sea. A shore battery hit the ship, and three sailors was killed, and he was one of them. Then 1 month later, the cruiser Houston went down into around Guadalcanal, and they got in between two battleships, and they blew her all to pieces. And there was very few survivors on it. What few survivors were sent to build the bridge of River Kwai. And to finish the story, we were playing ball again 2 weeks later, and when the mother got the telegram from the depot that her son, Glenn Wise, was killed on the Houston.
So even in a small town in the corner of Colorado, the war brought death to this small town.
Yes, it did.
Tell me how you ended up in the Navy.
Well, when you take your examination at the New Custom Building in Denver, they give you your examination, and then they line you up. I don't know how they did anywhere else, but in that particular day, as we walked through that line, they said, Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, Army, Navy, Marines. And I just happened to land up in the Navy.
Boy, that's kind of crazy to think about, isn't it? That just that random pattern could determine someone's fate.
That's right. And all the kids in that area, they got the Marines, were all on Iwo Jima. But I was in the Navy, and I was at Iwo Jima too, but aboard ship.
So you're saying if you were one spot off in line, you would have been wearing a Marine Corps uniform and getting shot at on those beaches.
That's right. However, when we left boot camp, we all caught three destroyers in Bremerton, the Hull, the Spence, and the Monaghan, and the Wilson. During the Leyte Gulf invasion, a month before that, Admiral Halsey was caught in the worst typhoon that ever hit the Pacific. We were supposed to be on the Hull, but the Hull and Spence and Monaghan all capsized during that typhoon. The reason why they did is because they pumped their ballast off to take on fuel, and we were next to take on fuel. But we still had our ballast. We were still sitting low in the water.
Yeah, I've interviewed survivors from the Hull and the Monaghan who survived that typhoon. Oh. Yeah, miraculously. So.
Well, they would be my boot camp buddies, because that boot camp, out of that 150 in that boot camp, there was only five guys got schooling. All the rest of us went right aboard ships.
So I understand. What was the point at which you would have gone on one of those ships, and why did you go to the Wilson instead?
Because the guy before me was a Marine, so he went to the Marines, and then I went to the Navy, and then so forth. It was just a matter of luck what ship we went on.
And what was your job aboard this destroyer, the Wilson?
I was a signalman, a striker. We didn't get school, so we'd pick out a group aboard ship that you thought that you'd like to be in. And I saw the signalmen up there, up on the bridge all the time, and looked like they were doing a really fantastic job of talking to everybody from other ships. And I thought, I asked if I could join their gang, and they did. They let me in. April 16th at 9:30 in the morning, we were sitting off of Okinawa a ways, waiting for, we called the cap, waiting for the suicide planes to come in. And then to the south of us, here come a low-flying plane, and our captain said he's heading for us. And as he approached, he said he's going to get us. And he did. He hit us. He was carrying a 500-pound bomb. The bomb, he released the bomb before he got to the ship. The bomb went through the skin of the ship but did not explode. But the rest of the plane went over the fantail of the ship and scraped it with all the guys on the back of the ship.
And you're telling me what the captain's saying, and I want to make sure I understand. You're with him there on the bridge, and you're hearing him saying it, like from me to you?
Yes, real close.
And could you see it too?
Oh, yes, I saw it coming in. But I had the phones on, my helmet on, and the phones was connected to the cord. The whole ship was communicated with each other anytime. And so the captain said, "We got to get out of here." So I was the first one around the corner of the bridge. I come to the end of the cord, fell on my back, and the rest of the crew fell on, the captain fell on top of me, and pushed in the speaker in my mouth and on my nose. I lost all my teeth of it. But they didn't fall out, and they said, "Anybody hurt?" And I was just a young 18-year-old kid, and I didn't report it. No, I'm all right. But later on, the Navy put in some teeth for me.
So how many teeth did it knock out?
All my bottom teeth and several of my upper teeth. Some of them didn't fall out until after I got home.
Did break your nose too?
Yeah.
And this was all trying to get out of there and try to help wherever help's needed. But what were you able to do after sustaining that injury?
Well, there's always a little bit of humor, whatever it happens. And I was laying on my back looking up, and the captain was on his stomach looking down right face to face. And he says, "Sailor, get to your post right now or I'll court-martial you." And I said, "Captain, just as soon as you get off the top of me, I will."
And it's good to have humor. You need it in those situations. But I'm sure it wasn't long till you realized some of your shipmates had been killed.
Right. We found that out later. Now, here was an event that was kind of sad. The men in the magazine were trapped. And the chief come up to the captain and says, "The magazine's smoking, Captain, and we don't know whether it's on fire, but if it's on fire and in the magazine, she's going to blow." And Captain says, "Well, what do you recommend, flood the magazine or take a chance she won't blow?" Chief said, "I'm not making that decision. You'll have to make it." So the captain said, "Then flood the magazine," meaning that if they weren't dead, that they drowned. And he said, "Now don't ever tell me how they died." He was a captain from the Great Lakes area out of Chicago, and he was a very good captain.
Can you imagine having that decision rest on your shoulders, having to make that life or death call about those sailors?
I've thought about that my whole life and still do. But I imagine a lot of commanders in World War II had to make similar type of decisions.
And I think I read there were five men who died that day?
Right.
Were they all in the magazine?
Yeah, and that's where I was supposed to be, because everybody changes places ever so often to become efficient in case you do get hit. No matter where you are, you're supposed to be well trained for wherever you are. And those were all my shipmates and buddies that got killed.
And what do you mean you were supposed to be there? Your shift was about to change or what?
Well, no. Some of the guys are on the bridge and some of the guys on general quarters. We change back and forth so that we become sufficient in no matter where we are aboard ship that we can fill in. And it just so happened that I was on the bridge at that time.
And I know this is redundant for you or obvious, but for folks listening, I know they're reading between the lines, but let's spell it out really clearly. Your captain in that moment had to decide whether to definitely sacrifice those five lives or their lone chance of saving those lives was risking the rest of the ship, right? I mean, what would have happened if that magazine blew up?
The ship would have went down, especially with that 500-pound bomb and the magazine, probably in 30 seconds. She would have broke right into and sank. There probably would have been if any, very few survivors out of 300 guys aboard ship. Captain Roberts was the captain at that time, and he was a very, very good captain, very considerate to everybody.
And if you had been in that magazine, like you easily could have, you certainly would have wanted him to save your life. But the decision he made likely did save your life, right?
That's right. He saved mine because I wasn't in that magazine.
Well, and if he didn't flood it and it exploded, you would have been out of luck.
Yeah, that's right.
And you mentioned the 500-pound bomb that didn't explode. Where did that bomb end up?
In the communication compartment where all the signalmen and the radiomen were. A demolition squad came aboard from one of the big tenders and disarmed the bomb. Then they gradually pushed it out the same hole that it went through the skin of the ship, which was, the back end was underwater, and then shoved it out into the ocean. Then the crews come in and they welded the plate where the bomb went through. Then we pumped all the water out of the back end of the ship and went right back into action again.
Well, I asked you about the magazine, if it had exploded. What about that bomb? If that 500-pound bomb had gone off, what would have happened to you?
Well, being on the bridge, it would have buckled and I would have went down with the ship without a question.
You know, that's a lot of history that you've lived through, that you've witnessed and you've been a part of. But I'm just thinking about your personal story. And from the point of, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, you could have been a Marine on Iwo Jima to getting out of boot camp. You could have gone to one of those three destroyers that sank in the typhoon, but you went to the one of the four that didn't. To, you could have been in that magazine that was flooded, those five lives sacrificed to save the rest of the ship, and all these close calls. How do you explain all that? Isn't it kind of hard to believe that all those things went your way?
Well, I think about that quite often, that every time as I got older, the things don't go quite my way, then I get to thinking, geez, Lee, you're one of the luckiest guys in the world.
Well, and I know you believe that, and I know how fortunate this town is to have you, and I can tell just by spending a little time here how revered you are in this place. And here you've built this huge museum, you've preserved so much history. Why do you do it? Why do you keep doing it at age 92? What is so important about this to you?
Well, first of all, I was a good student in history in high school. We had some books in our library, town library, that you had to read. You couldn't check out. You had to read them there. And I did that. And I just gradually got interested in Western history, the building the railroad and so forth. And I've always history was my favorite class. That's the only subject I really got decent grades in. But I feel fortunate and glad that I did. Now, to answer your question, why I put this together was that I used to play golf with my buddies here in town. And we would meet every Sunday morning for golf. And one day I realized that I'm with these guys downtown all day long. And then on Sunday, I'm with them again. So I'm going to do something else besides play golf. And I have two brothers that just are both retired military, and all they want to do is just play golf. And I decided that golf takes too much of your time if you want to do something else in life. And so I put this together.
Well, and I know Julesburg thanks you, and America thanks you, and I thank you for that. And I saw the barber chair. You said 68 years. Did you start cutting hair in the Navy?
No. I went to University of Denver for a year, and my folks still had three little kids at home. And even though I had the GI Bill, I let a friend of mine, he said, well, why don't you go to barber school and work your way for your last 3 years in school? Well, I did, but I never did go back into school.
Well, I think it worked out all right for you. Have you been to the National World War II Memorial in Washington yet?
Yes, I have. The Honor Flight.
Was that Northern Colorado Honor Flight?
Yes. Yeah, great ship. One of the best things I've ever done is for the people that honored us the way they did. Every place we went, we had a clapping ovation. So appreciative.
What did you think about at that World War II memorial, especially when you look at that wall of gold stars, 406,000 guys like you who didn't come home? What was going through your mind there?
I knew that the figures before, 400,000 dead, 600,000 wounded, but I didn't realize that gold star would represent that many people. But that really makes you think how lucky you were that you weren't one of them. But, you know, the other thing is, they got to remember that only one out of 12 of 16th million men saw action.
And I know you saw plenty. Did you think about those five guys from the magazine when you were at that memorial?
I got their name by my nightstand where I read at, and every once in a while I dig that out and I got them on a card and I think about them. The chance that they didn't have and the chance that I had.
Did you know those guys personally?
Yeah, they were my friends.
And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what I heard and what you just said is that the way you've lived, the way you have, the reason that you've done so much for this city and for people and for educating future generations of Americans is partly to honor the life those guys never got to have.
Right. I think about them all the time. Then when I see young people, the way they act nowadays, it's hard for me to have any sympathy for them at all, because the boys in the Depression plus World War II was a great sacrifice. Can you see, once in a while I visualize this, a soldier or a Marine laying on the beach, they'd just been hit with a grenade or a shell, and he was holding his stomach in, probably about to lose it, and look up at the stars and said, God, what did I ever do to deserve this?
It's so hard for those of us who have never been in combat to understand what it was like, but I trust you'll agree stories like these help us a little bit. On Veterans Day and every day, they can help shape our perspective. Go to hometownheroesradio.com to find the complete original interview with Lee Kaiser. And if you're ever driving cross-country, work Julesburg and that old Ford Garage and Museum into your itinerary. You will not regret it. When we come back, meet a man who overcame discrimination and a segregated military in World War II to become a pioneering heart surgeon. This special Veterans Day edition of Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.